Radio EcoShock.
We humans have always believed the sea is so vast we can't seriously damage it. A new report warns this isn't so. It's called The State of the Ocean 2013 Perils, Prognoses, and Proposals. We've reached one of the lead authors, Professor Alex Rogers of Somerville College, Oxford, and Scientific Director of IPSO, the International Program on the State of the Ocean. Dr. Rogers, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks very much.
The subhead of the press release says greater, faster, closer. Should we be worried about the state of the oceans overall?
Absolutely. We know that over the past 50 years, the oceans have been under increasing stress from overfishing, destructive fishing practices, and pollution. But over this time, climate change effects have also been slowly creeping in. So, for example, the oceans have absorbed something like 90% of the heat coming from the effects of greenhouse gases on atmospheric warming. So the ocean's been getting warmer. They've also been getting acidic, as a result of taking up carbon dioxide.
The United Nations' latest climate report concludes that most of our carbon pollution is falling into the oceans rather than the land. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's right. The oceans perform this marvelous service for us by taking up something like one-third of the carbon dioxide that we're emitting every year. Unfortunately, the side effect of that is that carbon dioxide reacts with seawater to produce carbonic acid, and that is reducing the amount of calcium carbonate in seawater, which many marine organisms use to build their skeletons from or their shells.
You talk about a deadly trio of stressors we are imposing on the sea. The first is deoxygenation. Many of us have the impression dead zones are just a problem around a few river deltas. Is that true?
Dead zones are certainly a coastal phenomena, but what we've seen in the wider ocean is an increase in the extent of what are called oxygen minimum zones. So this is a zone found around all of the oceans where oxygen naturally reaches a lower concentration than nearer the surface as a result of bacterial breakdown of organic matter sinking out from surface waters. These dead zones are expanding because of the effects of warming of the ocean, which decreases the mixing of the oceans vertically and also decreases the amount of oxygen that seawater can hold. We've already seen that this is compressing the habitat of large marine fish like marlin, which need high oxygen concentrations to maintain their very high metabolic rates.
You've also said that perhaps this will happen more in some areas of the North Pacific and especially in tropical seas. Why those areas, and how could global warming cause that?
Well, those areas already naturally have lower concentrations of oxygen associated with them. And as I said, one of the effects of the sea warming is that it can hold less oxygen. So naturally there are low oxygen concentrations in warmer water. This is one reason why, for example, some Antarctic animals, which live in very, very cold water, can reach a giant size compared to their warmer water relatives.
And next up on your list is ocean acidification. It's a huge topic, I know, but can you just give us an introduction to what some of the worries are there?
Yes, ocean acidification has been nicknamed climate change's evil twin in that it's something that we weren't really that aware of. Everyone was aware of the fact that the oceans were warming, and that has major consequences in terms of causing things like mass coral bleaching. But acidification is actually caused by carbon dioxide dissolving into seawater. And this produces carbonic acid, which then alters the natural carbonate equilibrium in seawater. What this means for marine animals that grow shells or skeletons from calcium carbonate is that their growth rates are reduced – or their shells or skeletons are actually changed in structure, they become weaker. But also, as research is continuing, more and more effects of acidification are being found. So, for example, it's been discovered that acidification affects the ability of marine animals to smell. So if acidification continues, we may see effects like larval reef fish unable to find their habitats to settle on and then grow up into adults because they can no longer perceive their environment in the way that they can in the present day.
And then you report warming itself can damage the ocean. I wonder how that can work and how serious a problem that is.
This is certainly something which already is having a pervasive effect on marine life. So many people think of climate change as something which will cause impacts in the future. But we know that since 1979, for example, when we saw the first mass coral bleaching events, that the oceans have already passed, if you like, a tipping point. Mass coral bleaching occurs when the oceans warm up and temperatures get too high and the corals eject symbiotic microscopic algae that they rely on for their energy and their nutrients, and the corals then die. One of these warming events in 1997-1998 killed 16% of the world's coral reefs. We also see all over the world now poleward shifts in the distribution of marine life as a response to warming temperatures, changes in the timing of biological events in the ocean, and shifts in the structure of entire ecosystems as species move to try and keep pace with favorable temperatures that they like to live in.
The international community has suggested that 2 degrees is the limit of global atmospheric warming that we shouldn't pass. Are there similar lines we can set for the ocean heating?
Well, in our view, 2 degrees is probably already too high for marine ecosystems like coral reefs. And if anything, we should be trying to reduce those targets. The way things are going at the moment, it's unlikely that we'll actually meet that 2-degree target. It's more likely that we'll actually overshoot those targets. And that is going to have catastrophic consequences for marine ecosystems, particularly very sensitive ones like coral reefs. And we must remember here that these are the most diverse marine ecosystems on Earth. They also produce huge socio-economic services for humankind in parts of the world where those coral reefs occur. So there are direct economic consequences of these impacts.
This is Alex Smith. I'm talking with Oxford marine biologist Alex Rogers on a new report about the state of the oceans. We've heard recently that a warming ocean has disrupted the hydrological cycle. Very warm seas appear to be linked with extreme rainfall events or more violent storms. Is that theory or is there solid science behind that?
I mean, this is slightly out of my area of expertise because I'm a marine biologist, but it's certainly the case that greater heat stored up in the oceans can result when that's combined with natural environmental cycles in these extreme weather events. So, for example, it's been found that the oceans periodically appear to dump their heat during what are called El Niño events, and those events are coupled with very, very heavy rainfall, particularly in areas like South America, but their effects are felt over a much, much wider area.
Alex Rogers, we're also demolishing ocean life by overfishing. In Canada, the historic cod fishery was killed off. And this is going on all around the world, and it's almost unreported. What did you find?
Well, this is a very interesting area because there's been a raging debate between scientists on whether the management of fisheries are improving or getting worse. And it would seem that looking at the evidence as a whole, some fisheries are improving in their state, but those fisheries are mainly around the developed nations, places like Europe, the United States and Canada, where there is a large infrastructure to support that fisheries management. Elsewhere in the world, and we're talking about something like 80% of world fisheries, the news is not so good. And in fact, overall, yields from fishing are declining globally as a result of this mismanagement.
Despite all that you've said, I know there are some people who will be asking this obvious question. We live on land after all. Why do we have to act to save the oceans? It's a huge question, but what do you think?
Well, the more work I do on the oceans and the services they provide for humankind and indeed for the entire Earth life support system, the more I'm convinced that we should be very serious about maintaining their diversity and their function. Life in the oceans plays a pivotal role in the big biogeochemical cycles that maintain conditions on Earth as we've known them throughout the course of human evolution and beyond. Essentially, these climate change effects are causing changes to the way that life is structured, and we can expect, as a result, major changes in terms of ecosystem function. One of these, as I said, is the fact that the oceans take up large amounts of carbon dioxide, and we're very concerned that some of the impacts of climate change will actually feed back through the oceans and reduce the ocean's capacity to take up that carbon dioxide, with the obvious result that global warming will accelerate.
When we talk about solutions, I have to wonder, can we really separate the ocean from the atmosphere? Aren't they part of one system?
Insofar as greenhouse gas emissions are concerned, they are part of one system. And this is a very important thing to bear in mind. We often forget about the oceans as part of that system. The simple fact is that emissions have to be reduced. Otherwise, we're going to be faced with these major problems that are discussed in the IPSO papers. And these problems are creeping up on us very, very quickly. The rate of carbon dioxide change in the atmosphere is probably as great or greater than has been seen at any time over the last 300 million years. So we're talking about a very, very significant event and really a one-off experiment that we're performing with the Earth's atmosphere and therefore with the oceans and indeed with the entire biosphere.
And I want to ask Professor Rogers, solutions for overfishing have been proposed for decades. Are there any signs of sanity when it comes to regulating the fishing industry worldwide?
As I said, there have been some really good initiatives in reducing overfishing around the coastal waters of developed states. That's not the case in many other parts of the world. And the really crazy thing here is that actually we know the answers to solving this problem. There are too many fishing vessels out in the oceans fishing the stocks that are there. Fishing fleets are subsidized, continue to fish when they're no longer profitable and when the fish stocks they're targeting are in decline. Also, there's a large area of the oceans, which we call the high seas, which lie beyond national waters, which are very poorly regulated with regards to fishing. So it's a really urgent matter that we get new governance arrangements for the high seas that improve our ability to manage human activities. Here we're talking about fishing, but there are also many other activities which take place out on the oceans to make those activities more sustainable and to really improve the supply of fish.
Where will the new report be published, and where can my listeners find out more on the web?
Well, IPSO has a website which is available at www.stateoftheocean.org. That's State of the Ocean is all one word. The papers that report these findings have been published in the journal Marine Pollution Bulletin. These papers will be available for 6 months for readers to download free of charge.
As we finish up, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think the thing to add here is that many people are not aware of the problems that we face in the oceans and are not aware of how those problems are connected with the issue of climate change. So I'd really, really recommend that your listeners really go out there and find out for themselves what the issues are that we're facing.
Our guest has been marine biologist Alex Rogers. He is a professor of conservation biology at the University of Oxford and a fellow of Somerville College, along with co-lead author Professor Dan LaFollette and many other expert scientists. Dr. Rogers has released a major new report titled The State of the Ocean 2013, Perils, Prognoses, and Proposals. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio EcoShock. That's it this week for Radio Activism. Download our past programs and help the cause at our website, ecoshock.org. The blog is at ecoshock.info. Next week, the climate scientists speak freely. Our opening music was Dance, live at the Labyrinth Shambhala Music Festival 2011. That will take us out.